Hello, everybody. Thank you for tuning into. Into? Tuning to?
Tuning into.
Into? Yeah. Thanks. thanks for tuning into a new episode of Adventures in the Creative Industries. Today, I am here with Alice Carnegie.
You said my name right. Well done.
Alice is an illustrator by night. Mm-hmm. And how would you describe your job by day?
So the official title is gallery assistant. I work at a printmaking studio at the front of house. So I do kind of a whole bunch of things. It's kind of a mixture of things. Answering emails, phone calls, selling prints, sending prints, packaging prints. Currently we're setting up a new exhibition, so we're doing all the work for that. So it's kind of a whole bunch of things. Still creative, but a lot more admin, I would say.
On the side.
Yeah.
Also, like, you have access to one of the best print places in Scotland.
I do. Hooray! I do. Yeah.
And for an illustrator, I would call that a win.
It is, for sure. And to my own sort of just not taking full advantage of it, which is my own fault, but I finally had my proper induction maybe about a month ago, so expect to see proper prints.
Proper prints. Well, you're still there, because now I know that you were telling me that you guys are going to be moving from...
Yeah, we're moving building. So that's kind of what a lot of our job is at the moment, is figuring all that out. But so at Christmas we'll close, and then in April we'll open up in the new building. So that's really exciting. So that'll make my job a bit weird, but a bit interesting, I suppose.
That sounds about right.
Yeah, I think so.
So a lot of stuff will come out. Remember when you were telling me, and the first thing I thought, like, God knows what's in the basement.
Yeah, because we've been in that building for like 38 years.
There must be prints of artists that right now are like crushing it all over the world and are like super famous, and you've got prints sitting there.
So we're doing sort of like a whole inventory of everything at the moment. So that's kind of discovering all of that again. Like, obviously we have it all in our systems and we know which artists
we've
worked
with. Oh, you know
what's
downstairs then.
Damn. We know the majority of what's downstairs.
It would have been so cool though.
If we found like an incredible John Bellany or
something.
Yeah,
you're like, oh my God. So expect an exhibition very soon. The printmaker's basement.
Well, we'll see. We'll see. Maybe in the new building. Maybe. Be like, here's all the things we
More
found.
Space.
But most of it's on our archive anyway, so we do know most of it. Boring. Slightly less exciting.
Yeah.
We do have like a tricycle we found downstairs.
A tricycle.
Like a really creepy, like The Shining old vintage tricycle.
Oh,
and we've got like a
nice,
really creepy hallway. So like we had fun with that for a minute. You know,
for
work.
A minute. That's what happened, I guess, when you work in a gallery.
Yeah, of course. You gotta be creative.
Oh man. Look, when I was at uni, like 15 years ago, I remember I was working in the library in Rome. Mm-hmm. And the uni,
just casually working in the library in Rome.
Roma Tre at uni at the time when I was studying, and it was like the most fun I've ever had in a job. Mm. I mean, like, you know it's like silly like that.
Yeah.
And it's just, I really loved it. So it sounds like you're having fun at work.
Yeah, and I really love who all the people I work with. So that really helps. Sort of, we're a very small team that works there. So it's good that we're all sort of close-knit. So it's really lovely.
That's nice. Yeah. That's really lovely. So as usual, I'm trying to do a little bit of research on my guest. One thing I've seen through your work, it's like you're kind of dedicated to your project. So you come out with a project and off you go, you make this project.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing we were saying before the podcast as well, it was like how you can see the progression in your Instagram from when you started to when you started finding your voice to when you did find your voice. So I wanted to drive me through this process. And like, when did you start looking for your voice and your style to the point where you got to your voice and your style, moving from project to project, basically?
Yeah, so it's been a long journey for that, for sure. Like, my Instagram, I started when I was in uni, and I'd started doing sort of digital drawings, which was off the back of buying like a Wacom bamboo tablet. And I knew that I wanted to try and do some digital art because that was the art I was seeing and enjoying, and had never really done it before. And I knew it would be easier for doing projects and jobs because it's just difficult to do traditional sometimes, to send it off via email or whatever. So I started doing digital drawings and just sort of like things that I really was enjoying at the time. So movies I was watching or TV shows or musicians or things like that. Like I would just draw a picture every single day and post it on my Tumblr and my Instagram. And I was enjoying it because I was learning how to draw digitally, but I wasn't really like putting any vision across necessarily. I was more just sort of replicating things. So screenshots of films or TV shows that I was really like passionate about, but not really taking it anywhere. And like I have very obsessive tendencies and I get really into one thing. And I know for like a while my daily digital drawings were just Doctor Who, because new Doctor Who came out with Peter Capaldi and I was like, hey, this is all I'm gonna draw. And like, so I kept on doing that and it really helped me sort of get better at drawing in general, like both traditionally and digitally. But I knew that I wanted to push it further. I started doing GIFs and things like that, which was really exciting for me because I was learning, but also there was something really nice about seeing stuff move. It like really made me excited about what I was making, but it still wasn't my content. It was just fan art of other people's work. And people are receptive to that, but there's sort of, you feel not necessarily disappointed in yourself, but you're kind of just, what am I saying, almost?
That is very interesting, because with Pablo last week, mm-hmm. we were talking about the same exact thing about fan art.
Yeah.
And it's interesting to hear, like, your perspective on it. So, yeah. Like, did you like to do fan art?
I love doing fan art, and I'll still do fan art. Like, I'm listening to a lot of Troye Sivan at the moment, and I'm definitely going to do, like, an image of him, maybe a GIF or something, because it's the way I sort of process my passions and obsessions at that moment. It's, like, a weird thing. I used to write lyrics from songs that I loved just repetitively in, like, books and do little drawings around them. But anyway, so I was doing all these digital drawings.
Yes.
And making this fan art, and people were responsive. The Doctor Who stuff, actually, the Doctor Who Tumblr retweeted it, what's Tumblr? Reblogged it.
Let's reblogged use the right terminology
it a couple times. Yeah, of course. reblogged it a few times, and then I started getting attention for Doctor Who stuff. But then I was like, I don't want to just draw Doctor Who things. And I was sort of struggling a little bit in uni with my projects and what I was making outside of uni, like my personal projects and my actual coursework, and it was not really correlating very well. And I started doing these sort of like little badges, and I started drawing little portraits, and I always liked drawing people. That was always like my favorite thing to draw, was people and faces. But I started drawing these sort of very colorful faces of girls, and that's kind of where it all began, really.
So when was that?
That would have been in the end of third year, the start of fourth year.
Which is?
So when did I graduate? 2016. So 2015 to the end of 2014.
Okay. So that is quite early on.
And yeah.
Like to find already like something that looks like your style.
Yeah, because you can definitely see from those badges like that's the start of it all, even though they're so like underdeveloped at that point. But I didn't know at the time when I was drawing it that that was what I would go forward with.
Okay.
And even my tutors were like, these badges you're making outside of uni should be your work that you're doing inside of uni. But I couldn't mentally put that together. I couldn't figure out how to make a project of it.
But you're like, no, that's stuff I like.
Yeah, like, I don't know why I had this block where I couldn't accept that I should be making work that I enjoy to make as my uni work necessarily. So I kept on making these badges, and so they were on wood with Posca pens. Now, finding Posca pens was a big discovery for me as well, and I think was a huge part of me finding my style and how I wanted to draw things. Because for anyone who doesn't know what Posca pens are, they're a specific type of paint pen. They're non-toxic. They only come in like a limited range of colors. I'd say there's maybe about like 36 colors, so it's not super limited, but to start off with, you only really have like a set of 15 or whatever to sort of start with. And I really like that there was a limited color palette with that. With my digital drawings, I think color was always a struggle for me. If you see my drawings of portraits of people, like specifically there was one of the first ones I did was of Brie Larson in Short Term 12, and the colors are so like muddy. I don't know why I made her like a weird greeny brown color. I just, color theory was just not a thing that I was particularly strong at. And having the Posca pens limited my color choices and sort of really spoke to the work that I enjoyed by other people and the fact that they did have such limited color palettes. And I think around the same time, so 2015, I started to embrace stuff that I think I had previously deemed uncool.
Oh,
due to
right.
some internalized misogyny about what is cool and what is not cool, and realized that all the shit that I liked as a kid that I then was like, oh no, it's not cool. I'll just say that I like, I don't know, sci-fi, which I do like. You can still like sci-fi.
Yeah.
But the thing about feminine things being uncool and masculine things being cool, like in pop culture terms, it's still a thing that we deal with now. But for me, I realized that I do love the color pink, and I do love the Spice Girls, and I do love glitter, and that's okay. And I can love it along with The Thing and Alien and Deftones, and that's
absolutely,
okay.
Yeah.
And I can merge that all together.
Yeah.
So it was a personal change as well for me. And then sort of the Posca pen color palette was so bright and garish and colorful, and it really spoke to my love of like toys and childhood stuff and Barbie and things like that. And so kept drawing these badges. People started to really respond to them. I started doing art fairs and selling them, and it was such a nice experience, because I'd been selling fan art online or at fairs and stuff, and that was nice and it was rewarding. But when I started selling stuff with my own drawings and own original artwork on it, it was a completely different feeling. It was a different validation of people enjoying my art style for my art style, and not because they liked that film or they liked that TV show
or that character.
Yeah, completely. And it really changed my perspective on what I wanted to make. And like for me, like I just wanted to draw women, and I for years had sort of repressed that, and I was like, everyone draws girls, like it's just like you're a sellout if you draw women because everyone draws women and that's what sells. But I was like, well, what if I draw women how I want to see them? And like I know so many incredible strong women, and I wanted to draw how I saw them and sort of create this universe, this sort of girl gang universe. So this was, that whole personal discovery was throughout fourth year, for sure. So like 2016. But it wasn't until I left uni, after having done all the projects for uni, left uni and then realised that, like, you can just draw girls if you want now. You don't need to prove anything to anyone.
That is so, like, I never thought about it like that.
Yeah.
Of saying, you know, I don't want to draw this because it's not cool, but then actually you're repressing the actual wish to draw that thing.
And the thing is as well, I think people immediately notice when you enjoy what you're making. And I didn't realize that I wasn't really enjoying what I was making until I started drawing stuff that I enjoyed, if that makes sense.
That makes perfect sense.
Yeah, like you didn't realize what you were missing until you started doing it.
But do you know what? Like the thing that strike me is how hard it is to do that.
Yeah, because people are like you. If you look outside to other people, you're gonna constantly be like, oh, but what do they want me to draw? Yeah. What does the audience want? What do my tutors want? What do the people that are buying my work want? But then I think it very much a just kind of fuck it attitude.
Do you know what? Like it's, I really value that, because for me, I always thought that what I do is very vanilla. So whenever I do something, right, then it's like...
I wouldn't think it was vanilla, but okay.
It is, because I struggle to really get what I want to do out there.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? Like, for me, it's very much like, if I start thinking of what's surrounding me, which is like, validation,
yeah,
want to feel good about yourself, it becomes heavy. So whatever you do, it becomes like,
there's a pressure.
It's kind of like it taints your efforts of finding your voice. For me, it took me forever. Mm-hmm. And like fan art is the embodiment of that.
Yeah,
Because the moment that you draw something that it's got, it's branded and somebody know it already, you're removing a whole aspect of creating a story.
Yeah.
While I was doing my project, my Post-it project, one of the things I loved the most, it was like earlier on, I drew this sci-fi series of characters. And they were like, there were no fan fiction or anything, just come up with it. And it was like, it was so satisfying to think, you know, oh, I can do a series of these characters. And people actually liked it. And they were very much simpler. I didn't discover pro markers at the time.
Yeah.
Because for me, pro markers are your uni podcast. Yeah. You know? Like, I discovered pro markers. And the thing I loved about it, you know, you do one line and then you do another line and it changes the shade. Yeah. And my mind were like, what? And the funny thing is, like, I grew up with all this around me. My mom used to love uni postcards, and she's an artist, and I grew up like amongst oil paintings, drawings and pens, and I would wake up late at night when my mom was asleep to get up and play with her pens, and she'll get pissed because the beds are expensive, and I was just like, everything was out, and she was oh my god. So that was fun, but like I totally forgot about that until I started playing with that stuff again, and I felt like that feeling of like
excitement.
It's actually fun.
And like, I think play is so important, and I think that's the thing, like, I do think back to my younger self a lot and sort of try and get that feeling back of being a kid and just making stuff. I want to make stuff that younger me would love and would be like, wow, that's so cool. And that's like the most validating thing for me is when I'm at cons and stuff and there's little girls that come up to me and they're like, this is so cool, I love it, and I love that it's pink, but like, she's got a crowbar, and I'm like, I know, right? Like, I know.
That's right, so that's again beautiful because it segues right into the next question, which is the girls
yeah, the
project,
girl gang,
right? And the girl gang, and what I like about it is that every character is different. It's got very defined traits, and like, you have a gang. You have they're screaming for being animated, you know, for being part of a cartoon series or a comic
book. I'd love that. If anyone wants to do that, I would be on board.
Get in touch, Alice Carnegie. So I tell me more about that. Like, how, I know, I understand now how you got to that, but like, I'd like you to talk more about the project.
Yeah.
And where did that take you?
Okay. So it's kind of been an ongoing thing for me. So there's been separate projects and shows, but it's an overall continuous project, I would say, my Girl Gang universe. It obviously came off the back of doing these badges, and it started very small. But when I got out of uni, when I was kind of just like, I don't really know what I'm doing with myself, I'm just going to make work that I want to make, I sort of decided to make these big heads, sort of larger than life girl gang heads. So it was, the badges went massive. I wanted to have them take up space, and I think I was quite angry at a lot of things, and I still am, about the world and what's happening, and specifically on behalf of womankind, and just sort of, I felt kind of confrontational, and I wanted to be a bit confrontational and
against whom?
Just not necessarily like men as a concept.
Good, thank you. As a concept.
But as a concept. Hashtag not all men. But just a lot of injustice, and like specifically catcalling was a thing that just is part of my daily life and is part of my friends' daily lives. And it just, like, it's not the end of the world, but it's those microaggressions that grind you down. And it's not anything like assault or anything like that. It's just these little things that grate you down. And you're like, you know what? I can't be fucked with this anymore. And I like the idea of making these sort of confrontational girls under the guise of colourful and cuteness, where on the surface it maybe seems quite friendly. And it's like, oh, it's bright and colourful. And then it's like, fuck you on a heart. or cunt on a pair of panties. I don't know if you can put that on the podcast, but...
Yeah, no worries.
Yeah.
No limits here.
People hate the word panties more than cunt anyway.
Why?
They hate the word panties.
I heard that thing. Yeah. Panties is
not I've got really... a friend that cannot listen to that word.
The word panties?
Yeah, she hates it. But yeah, so I made these, the first three heads that I made... And I kind of just made them for myself, not really understanding what they were for. There was kind of a competition I was maybe going to enter with them, but I was just like, oh, I'm just going to make them anyway. They were out of MDF and probably about 40 centimetres by 40 centimetres, depending on which head it was. And I made these three girls, and I really enjoyed the sort of little universe that I'd made. And interestingly enough, my flatmate at the time, Amy Dunn, who is also an illustrator that I studied with, she had
Hi,
been
Amy.
Yeah.
Nice to meet
Hi,
you.
Hi, Amy. she had been to Piss Modernism.
Oh, Piss Modernism.
And she went when we were in fourth year. She went, I think, maybe like 2 weeks beforehand in and asked me if I wanted to come, and I was like, no, I'm good. Like 2 weeks before our final hand-in for fourth year. Yeah, and it was just, I was kind of like, I can't go down to Edinburgh, because I was studying in Dundee at the time.
Oh, right.
I was like, I can't travel down to Edinburgh.
So what were you studying in Dundee?
Illustration.
Duncan
of Jornston. Yeah. Which I really loved. I'm from Edinburgh originally, and I moved up for that. But she went down and she met Marco, and it was when it was in the number shop. So when was that? Marco, yeah.
Little shout to Marco Bellacqua again.
Yeah.
Mate, you're constantly getting called here. We need to organize this. Right, sorry, continue.
No worries. So she met Marco, and it was when it was at the number shop. So that would have been 2016, I want to say. And I didn't go. But she really enjoyed it, and she came back and told me all about it. And then we both moved back down to Edinburgh when we graduated and we lived together. Then Marco was sort of posting on Twitter about setting up the new Piss Modernism for 2017. And Amy emailed him and was like, look, I'm in Edinburgh. If you need any help with setting up, we'd love to get involved, because both of us were just sort of looking for any way to get involved with creatives in Edinburgh, because it's kind of intimidating when you move back down and you're like, oh, we don't know anyone else. Like, you only know your own class, which is great. And we've got like a really tight knit group of our peers, and we're still really close friends, but you need to expand your circle to start getting involved in stuff. So she emailed Marco, and we both went for like a coffee with him, and he was chatting and looking for people to help sort of run the table for selling work over the week. And we were like, oh, we'd love to, like, we're happy to volunteer our time to be involved. And we thought we were just going to put labels in, and he was like, oh, if you want to put like work in the show, that would be great too, in exchange of your time. And I was like, okay. So that's where I took my heads. I took my three girl gang heads and the three objects. I'm trying to think what they were. There was a heart that said fuck you or fuck off, I can't remember. And there was a lightning bolt, because David Bowie had died and I was still sad about it. And then there was like a teardrop which said not for you, which was, I was angry about life.
Do you know what? I think we need to explain what Pissed Modernism is.
Oh, yeah. That's a good shout.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, okay, so Marco Bevilacqua is an illustrator, and he organized this competition where you really didn't win anything apart from the fact of making a piece of art on a bottle of beer.
Yeah.
And, like, you can sign up and submit your label, and then he would select a few labels, and this will then be shown in... an exhibition, which was Pissed Modernism, hence Pissed.
Yeah.
But the second year, it was such a successful thing. The first year, the first year was absolutely bananas. The thing kept on growing, and he started
expanding.
This fully fledged exhibition, and there was of course Alice's work on the wall, and it was Craig Black's work on the wall. Shout out to Craig; he's going to be on the podcast at some point soon.
Oh, nice.
And There were more artists, I just can't remember now.
There was
Emer
Tumulty.
Yes.
I might have pronounced her surname wrong. Amy also had work, Amy Dunn. She did some birdhouses. I'm trying to think of any of the other artists. Marco's work, obviously.
Marco, of course, was on the wall. And like, on top of that, Robert Cocker and the Creative Pines team mm-hmm. organized Creative Points, which was all about activism. And I was lucky to be part of it. But it was good fun to see this happening mm-hmm. from Marco's idea of let's put some beers on the wall and show what creative people can do in Edinburgh. Hey, look at all these cool illustrators, to, oh my God, there's so much people want to see this.
It was mad busy that night.
Yeah.
The night, and that's where I met you as well.
Insane. Exactly. You had yellow hair at the time.
I had yellow hair at the time. There's an excellent photo of me. There's just a crowd of everyone. And then in the corner, there's a yellow beacon. And everyone's like in black and grey. And like literally, if you look at that photo, it's like a shining beacon of yellow.
In fact, I went, because you did a talk at Creative Points about a month ago, I would say.
Yeah.
And I didn't recognise you at the time.
Yeah.
Because I remember you with the yellow hair.
I know.
When you said, oh, I was the one at the table, I was like, oh shit.
Because I remember we were at the pub and you didn't, like, I tried to make eye contact with you and you were just like,
no, I did not recognize you at all. Zero. And I remember we talked to and everything. And then I was like, when you said about the yellow hair, I was like, oh damn, is that you?
Yeah.
Because like, for people listening, right now your hair is green and
kind
golden-ish.
Of greeny blue, greeny yellow, blue. Greeny like, yellow. It changes. At the moment, green has been the longest standing colour in my hair. I like green.
Fair enough.
It's been staying for a while. I've done like pink and green and purple and green, but now it's got like greeny blue and yellow.
So you always do bicolor?
Yeah.
Apart from that time that you were like,
well, yellow was the first time that I dyed my hair like a mad colour. Yeah. So like, I've had mad coloured hair now for, it was April last year.
And it seems that you're loving it.
I love it. Yeah, and I used to have really long ginger hair, but it was like brown, but I dyed it ginger, and it was like nearly to my waist. That's how long my hair was.
Classic long hair. Then.
And that was after I graduated, and I was just like, I can't have this anymore. I felt so like out of sorts, and it's funny, like I think about five girls from my class all cut their hair short.
Do you know, it's hilarious because I did it exactly the same. Yeah. I used to have hair down to here to my shoulders, and I finished, and I was like to my girlfriend at the time, she's Chloe, my wife, and I was just like, I gave him the clipper, I was like, cut my hair right now.
Yeah.
She was like, no, I love your hair. I was like, cut my hair. And she did, because she was like, why? Because that was the uni hair.
Yeah.
Uni's over. No,
I think it was a very clear statement of like, I'm not that person anymore. And like, it's quite liberating. I don't miss my hair at all.
So, yes, you got to this to participate. Marco asked you to put some artwork on the wall, which was really striking, I remember.
Thanks.
Especially because there is something about having a physical object of something that is hand-drawn.
Mm.
And it's always like, you know, a painting is such a standard thing, but when you have a die cut, you know, a cutout practically of your artwork is different.
That's what I wanted it to be. Like, I really liked, what I liked about the MDF heads the most was that they weren't framed pictures.
Yeah.
And they were really sort of, I keep saying confrontational, but they're not a framed painting and they're not a standard format size, and they're an object. And I just really liked that they had a three-dimensional element to them. It was a way of taking my illustrations, and they're still flat and 2D, but there was a 3D element to them, which I like not just doing flat artwork for me. Like, I like making things, and I'm going to try and sculpt stuff. I keep talking about it, but I would like
please
to sculpt.
Please do, because I'd like to do
characters. Some characters. Yeah, for sure. But I did that, and so there's a gallery at Brunsfield called Studio Flamingosaurus Rex, which is a mouthful, but I was selling my brooches with them, because I approached them after uni being like, would you like to sell these? And they were like, yeah, sure. And they're very nice people. And they came along to Postmodernism and they saw the heads, and I'd mentioned to them previously about maybe doing a show, and they saw the heads and I was like, I would really like to expand on this. And they were completely on board, and I sent them along a proposal, and then that sort of became my show Bubblegum, really. And it was just expanding those heads, and making, I think I made like six big heads and then six small heads and then many, many little objects. And then there was a lot of work that I'd made, interestingly enough, the heads were really the only thing that was going to be part of it, and the objects and all the stuff that was made from MDF. But I realised that actually I'd been making more work outside of that, which was perfect for the show anyway, because I had been discovering my style, and I was making gifts, and I was making drawing on like birchwood circles as well with the Posca pens, and I was just doing that anyway and didn't even correlate that is my show, like this work is also my show. So I ended up having a lot more work than I thought I would have for it, and it really worked out, no pun intended. And yeah, that was kind of really monumental for me. That exhibition was a big turning point for me, and I think that really cemented me knowing exactly, not exactly, because I think your work does change over time, but sort of at that point, exactly what I wanted to make and what I was about as an artist. And the opening night, it was so nice because there was people that I didn't know that showed up, and that really meant a lot to me as well. And then people asked me, like, what does the work mean? And I was like, oh, shit, yeah. And sort of, like, it was, I wanted to have, like, good representation and sort of diversity across the board as well. And because our world is diverse. And also for me, like, all the media I consume, like, I watch a lot of movies and I watch a lot of TV, and I think I wasn't seeing what I wanted to see. So I was like, I'm going to make it for myself and have this imaginary world. But I suppose I didn't really go into the context that much at that point, which I can look at it critically back now and sort of say that I didn't really give a story behind them. Mm-hmm. But at the point, it said what I wanted it to say, I suppose. But interestingly enough, about that time, I was having a really, really crappy personal life. So
yeah.
Which I spoke about at my talk for Creative Points. Since I was 19, I was in a relationship, and now I'm 27. We broke up in January, so that's like 7.5 years. It's a long time. It's a long, long time. And around about that time before the show, so I'd say maybe about a month before the show launched, we'd started having conversations, very serious conversations. I think it would have been like September. So,
ooh.
Yeah, September 2017.
So that was about 7 years you guys were together.
Yeah.
And like, were you expecting something to happen, or just...
No, like, so... complete disclosure, like, neither of us did anything. Like, it was just one of those things where it's like, I was 19 when we got together, and when you're 26, you're a different person, like, fully. And he was a different person, and like I still care about him lots. We're still friends. We share dogs. So you gotta be.
We've got shared dogs.
I'm like a shared custody dog mom.
How is that working?
It's complicated.
So do you keep the dog for a week and he keeps the dog?
They live with him. I would say, to be honest, like, credit to him, he looks after them the most, because I can't, because I work so much. Like, his schedule's a lot more flexible. So I'd say in reality, I probably look after them 5% of the time.
All right.
But I can
see
them.
So you've got weekends and he's got custody.
Well, not even. I go do them in evenings when he needs me to do them and stuff, and then I can go see them whenever I want. But like, we're friends, it's fine. There's no hard feelings. But it was heartbreaking at the time. And the month before the show, it was like, everyone was so excited for me, and they're like, oh, you're doing this show, this is so cool. And all my friends were like, yeah. But no one knew that, like, I was going through all of this shit and all this turmoil.
Did you not speak to your friends about it?
I think, I don't know about you or, like, other people that I've spoken to in long-term relationships, but you kind of just don't share that. There's an unspoken rule that when you're in really, like, a very long-term thing and you're having a hard time, you don't really share...
Fuck that.
All of that.
Who said that rule?
Well, no, for me, that's how I felt, because it wasn't my information to share as much. I don't know, which is weird for me, because I speak to all of my friends a lot, and they just didn't know, and I was just hiding it because I think I was maybe ignoring the problem, and I was just like...
Maybe you didn't want to deal with it.
Yeah, I think subconsciously maybe I knew that this was the start of the end, but I didn't want to face that. And I knew if I started talking to people, then it made it real. That's maybe, probably.
Maybe like that's a good excuse.
Some therapy here.
That's a good way
here.
Of saying it. Yeah, yeah. Some therapy. But definitely talk about it with your friends.
Well, yeah, no, completely. Time. Don't do what I did. No. That's not a recommendation at all.
Absolutely.
And then, since January, like, I've been closer to my friends than I ever have been. And it's been lovely. And then they've shared stuff that I had no idea that was happening with them. And it's been really actually very wonderful.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and, like, I feel more like myself than I have. But back then, like, when the show was happening, also, I think it was... The week before the show, like, that was the hardest week for me, because we had, like, a very serious conversation. And then, like, I was crying, like three times a day and painting at the same time. And I was just trying to get these heads painted. So there's a weird correlation between that work that I made at that point in time, which was also... I felt like I was a bit of a fraud because I was making work of these strong women and I didn't feel... like a strong woman.
I'm wondering if that helped you somehow.
I don't know. It might have. And also because, like, you're projecting and it's what you want to be, I suppose. And I think, I don't know. It was a weird time. And, yeah, I was crying constantly. And I think my friends just thought I was tired because of the show. So it was just kind of like, And then we had the launch and... that was fantastic, but, like, everything was kind of tinged with, like, a sadness, which is really unfair.
A layer of sadness inside
you.
Yeah,
and it felt so unfair, and it wasn't anyone's fault. It wasn't his fault. It wasn't my fault. It was just sad. And then I got nominated for a Creative Edinburgh Awards.
Which, you know, it's a beautiful thing, if you think about it. After all that effort and all the hardship and this shit time, you know, let's face it. That a breakup rings, at least you got something very positive out of it.
Yeah, but even then, that was like, what, 2 months after the show or something? And you put yourself forward for it, also, just FYI. It's not like they just went, yes, you shall be nominated. I was still really sad. Like, there was still a lot of stuff going on. And he came and my friends came and we were all like, yeah, this is so fun. And I was just like, there's a lingering sadness in my life.
This is amazing, but it's a little bit shit inside me.
Yeah, and just... and it's funny to me. So one of my friends lives in Dundee still. And she...
I'm sorry.
I miss her. Aww. Sarah, shout out. She's also an illustrator. Mysterious Cube. She's great.
We need to do like an illustrator round table.
Yeah.
Just have a conversation.
I can bring them all.
We'll do male on one side, female on one side. Go.
I'll bring Rory to my side. Rory Carson, also shout out because I love him. So my friend Sarah, she was kind of felt like she wasn't getting her artwork out there at the time. And then she said to me at a later point now that when I was getting like my show and my nomination and stuff, she was like, oh, you're doing so well and I don't know what I'm doing. And I'm like, she didn't know at the time, like, I was having the worst time I'd had in a long time. And it's a shame that I didn't share it with her at the time, but like, now we've spoken about it tons. But it's interesting that you don't know what people are going through. And on the surface, like, I was posting on Instagram being like, oh, I'm so grateful.
And this is a great
of course
time.
I'm grateful. And of course it's like a wonderful thing to be a part of. But I would have given anything not to be as sad as I was that whole time, that year. Like that whole winter. A sad winter.
The winter.
Yeah, our winter of discontent. But now, like, obviously, like, we broke up in January and it was sad. But I think I feel a lot better than I have. And I feel, like I already said, like a lot more like myself. Mm. And, like, obviously it's not a fun thing to go through.
So was that the main reason then? While, like, you end up in hospital at the end? And, like...
No, so I ended up in hospital. So we broke up in January, but I didn't move out until March. That's how good friends we were.
That's
it
fun.
It was fine. It was like living with your best friend, almost. It's Relationships are complicated.
I don't know.
It was weird and sad, but we did it. And he's a very good person. And I only want people to know that he's a good person. I need to get my timelines. So I moved into a new flat and there's a project I'll go back to. But in like June or something, my friend Sarah, that I just spoke about, Mysterious Cube, and my friend Rory, who I just mentioned, Rory Carson, who I studied with in Dundee as well. Mm-hmm. We all decided to do a group show. And we were like, let's do it. Because we spoke about it when we were in fourth year a lot. And we were like, we should do a group show when we graduate. Like, the first year didn't happen. Because I think none of us knew what we wanted to do either. But then we finally got our shit together. And we were like, okay, I think this is the time to make it. And originally it was supposed to actually happen in March. But I knew in, like, December that stuff wasn't going so well for me. And I was like, can we postpone this? And they didn't know why. And I was like, I'm just really busy. Can we just not do this right now?
Can we not do this now, yeah. Please? Thank you.
And then, because in March I moved out. But we did this group show and I worked really hard. So I was working at the printmakers 30 hours a week, but I took 2 weeks off. I used my holidays, basically, to make my work for the group show. So I worked solid for 2 weeks on the work for the Kingdoms group show, which was it was supposed to be like a world building show because all of us do sort of our own little universes and character
That's
building.
Really cool.
Yeah, it was a really lovely exhibition, and we decided to do it with Studio Flaming Source Rex again because they'd been so lovely when I worked with them, and I knew that it was sort of a good idea to just keep that relationship with them, and shout out to them. They're wonderful at setting up shows and they're very good people to work alongside.
That's awesome to hear.
Yeah, they're
we need
really,
more people like them.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it's really difficult to find galleries that will take more commercial stuff and do exhibitions that are a bit weirder and not contemporary or fine art,
which is, if you think about it, is what it should be, right?
Well,
you you need to find that kind of balance of something that is weirder.
Yeah, of course.
Because you want that type of artist to not be discouraged, but to still be doing stuff.
And exactly.
I would say the things you do, they're not like crazy weird either. Like,
no,
they're very like
commercial
work.
Yeah, completely. Yeah. But I think that almost makes it harder.
Which is quite an interesting conversation to have. Because
It's
like, there is this feeling that it has to be fine art to be in an exhibition, but why?
Yeah, I think people look at commercial work as less than sometimes, and especially illustration as less than. And I don't know why that is. I'm sure there's plenty of studies in it. And I think for me, like drawing women as well, people are like, well, it's not that deep or whatever. And I'm like, well, fuck you. I'm going to make my stuff like, and if people like it, they like it. But for the group show, so we really wanted to make this world building element, and I worked really hard for 2 weeks, but I should have made the work a lot earlier, but because I was still struggling because of the fallout of my relationship, I found it very difficult to think of an imaginary world that I wanted to make, and I wasn't feeling that enthused about my artwork. So it was very much a 2 week sprint rather than a nice slow build up of work,
which is not good.
It's not healthy. And I really was not sleeping enough, and I wasn't, like, I was eating, but just not very healthy. And just running on a lot of caffeine and, like, a lot of panic. And I'm quite an anxious person anyway. So, like,
it sounds like the worst combination that you could have put together for
and
an anxious
like,
person.
And then, like, cabin fever as well, and not leaving your house and just sort of working constantly. And also, like, working on the floor and not working at a desk and all this stuff. Like, just contorting your body and stuff. And I was spray painting stuff and things like that. But I do actually really like the work I made for it. I just wish that I'd made it over a much longer period of time. But so we had the launch in June. And then I was very tired. And then a week later, I was in the hospital, which was fantastic. It wasn't a direct cause of me being exhausted. It was a kidney infection, so that was like shit anyway. But it definitely wouldn't have got as bad as it did if I hadn't have been as run down as I was. If I hadn't have like
just ignored my body completely.
Is that a combination of like working too much?
It was a perfect storm.
You're not feeling well, it doesn't matter, I need to work, whatever. You didn't go to the doctor, or you didn't get checked, or you didn't look at what you were eating. So it's just like...
Also, like, shout out to women here or people with uteruses. If you have cramps that then are cramps in your back, go get it checked out, because I just thought I had period cramps and it wasn't just period cramps. So please, look after yourselves. I tell every person with a uterus this now.
Yeah, kidney infection is not fun.
It's not fun. And I was in the hospital. It was only really supposed to be one night, and then it was four nights. Like, it was a long time, and shit got scary. Shit got real scary. And, like, it's been a year for me. 2018 has been a year.
A year is all up and downs.
Yeah.
Peaks and valleys.
Yeah.
And loads of shit.
Yeah, so, January, so analysing my relationship, and then in June, analysing my mortality a little bit. And then just being in the hospital was bizarre. I don't know, I had never stayed in the hospital for a long period of time before.
Mm-hmm.
It's a weird place to be.
Yeah, it's not fun.
It's lonely.
Mm-hmm.
It's leaves you to just think a lot, which is bizarre, and you're just kind of like, what am I doing? What is happening? And also, like, for me, all I could think is, I don't want to be here again. I'd never want to be here again. And, like, shout out to the NHS, please, because they were incredible and they were wonderful, and, like, I couldn't have, like, I wouldn't
be okay
without them. And they're super, super important, but it wasn't somewhere I want to be ever. So I came out of the hospital and I was exhausted, because you're just exhausted. And, like, I was, like, a lot thinner and, like, just tired all the time. And I just kind of, it put a new perspective on everything, which sounds, it's such a cliche where you're like, I look at life differently now. And it does fade. And you go back into your same routine and you still get stressed. But I started to be like, I'm not doing anything that makes me anxious, and I'll just say no to things. And if I'm not 100% keen on something, I'll just say no, and that's fine.
So how are you applying that now?
Well, for like commissions or projects or things that I'm not keen on, I just say no now. But I also have the privilege of having a job that means that I can pay my rent. So I understand that that isn't a privilege that everyone has. If you're doing full-time freelance, you can't just say no to every project.
Well, like, out of experience, like, especially at the beginning,
mm-hmm.
after you're doing it for a couple of years, you start to be in that position where you have a little bit more choice of what you want and can do.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, I mean, like, you still are limited in terms of, like, you've got to pay the mortgage.
Yeah,
and
of course.
You have to pay everything else, so you've got to work. But I think it is especially hard for illustrators, because, you know, commissions are, if, like, a long commission for illustrator is not the same as a long commission for someone else.
No.
And, like, there's only so much money you can make out of a commission.
Yeah.
So it's, like, I really respect the life of a freelancer.
Mm.
Especially an illustrator or a musician, which
it's hard.
It's really hard to
make.
It's
really, really hard.
And like, you can make a living, but it's not going to come without loads of pain.
Yeah.
And there really is a lot of grinding.
Yeah. And I think that's why, for me, it is preferable to have a part-time, nearly full-time job and do the freelance, because it means that I can work on things that I love in my spare time, but not kill myself for it.
Yeah.
I think, like, it really put in perspective to me that, like, nothing is more important than my own health. Like, really, like, an illustration, like, I love drawing and I love it to pieces and it's what I'm passionate about, but no illustration's that important, really, in the grand scheme of things.
That's very true. We'd also, like, one of the past podcasts we were talking about, the fact that sometimes you burn out, you don't even know it.
Yeah.
Because you're young and, like, you don't realize what it is, mm-hmm. being burned out. And I burn out many times in my mm-hmm. life, because I tend to work in bursts. So I work really, really hard for a long period of time.
Yeah,
and
I do the same.
I paid the price for it. And like, what I think there is a misunderstanding of what a burnout is, and like, it's hard to recognize it because sometimes it's part of the way our brain works and this kind of like behaviors that we have and things that we do that clicks in our brain all the time. So it's like, you don't, sometimes those are heightened and you don't feel good and you feel depressed and you feel low, but you don't realize that you feel like that because you're pushing yourself too much.
Yeah.
So I think the hardest thing is to figure out balance. I don't know, like, I'm still trying to figure it out.
Oh,
and
yeah.
As much as a lot of more, a lot of other people that I've spoken to, there is real, like, the fact that you can push and this culture of hard work at all cost is killing us.
Oh yeah, like, I'm gonna get shit for this, but fuck Rockstar.
Don't say that. Right, okay, so
you can cut that out.
No, I'm not gonna cut it out. Yeah, you said it, now you're in trouble. Right, okay, so I think the Rockstar thing, right, it comes out at a bad timing.
Yeah.
Because Rockstar has improved a lot over the years.
Okay.
They have a much better HR department right now.
Okay.
But it's been like that for a long time. So the people are coming out of the woodwork, I understand why. But also, the experience is different for everybody.
Yeah.
And I'm saying that because I know people that work at Rockstar and they love it. So they, from what they're saying, it's like, I do work extra time when I want to work extra time and I get paid for every single hour of extra time.
Okay.
Okay. So I will come out of the woodwork and say, in advertising, in an agency, I know people that work 10 hours a day, every day, and they get fuck all.
Yeah.
For
there
the
is
extra
a culture
time.
Of
there is
that.
There is like, because in the creative industries it feels like there is this culture of like crunching and working hard, and that's the way it is. You should be grateful for your job, but actually Rockstar is not that bad if you look into it.
Okay.
And it's sad that it got into the spotlight, and I understand why.
Yeah.
But the 100 hours thing is really, again, it's a headline. It's a great, juicy headline for clicks.
Yeah.
But when you look, I think Kotaku made a very good article about it.
Okay.
If you want to read more.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, fuck everybody that implies that you have to work 100 hours.
Yeah, it's not exclusively Rockstar.
No.
But I think the way that it came out also was seen as like a bragging thing. And I think that's a really bad systemic problem.
That is true. That's back to that cultural work.
Yeah, the idea of that overworking yourself and killing yourself for a project is a cool thing to do. And it's just not. And
that's sad. It saddens me.
And just push the project back. Like, take care of yourselves. Like, I understand there's some people that love it and take pride in that, for sure. And I saw a tweet earlier today that was like, normally it's like, the person worked at Rockstar and they're like, normally it's fine and it's great and we love working there, but there are those weeks where it kills people. And I'm like, well, is that worth that?
That's the problem with the culture, because that's exactly what you're saying there. It's when everybody around you is accepting the fact that you have to do extra time, if nobody comes to you and say, hey, you've got to do extra time, you do anyway.
Yeah.
And you feel obliged because you're doing extra time, that dude is
there's
doing extra
standard.
Time. There's
a standard.
That lady there is doing extra time. We're all doing extra time
here.
And it's like, how do you stop thinking like that? Because the problem with gaming is also that that's nothing new. Like, if you think of indie developers, they work all the time.
Yeah, completely.
All the time. And it's like, sometimes they don't even make any money.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's a systemic issue here we need to try and solve. And
it's
back to the fact that you don't need to feel ill.
Yeah.
To make something good.
And I think it's difficult as well when it's like people in their early 20s. Because it's true, like how you said, like sometimes you don't recognize the burnout. And that's true for me. Like, I didn't think I ever burned out during like my uni years or like the first year after, but I definitely did. And like, I've spoken to, I know a couple of people that are in fourth year now from the course that I was on. And I keep on saying to them, I'm like, please look after yourselves, because you think you're invincible when you're that age. And like, you don't think it's going to be an issue. And for me, like I mentioned to you before the talk, like I'm having a lot of problems with my wrist at the moment, and it's meaning that I can't draw as much. And that's scary as shit to me. And that's also not good for my mental health. I had a horrible dream about it the other day. But that's scary. And I'm only 27. Like, I shouldn't be having repetitive strain injury problems. But it's from overworking, and it's from drawing for like hours on end without taking breaks and doing stretches. And I do stretches, and over this past year and stuff I've been doing work like that, but it should have been something I started in an earlier point. But when I was in my early 20s, it didn't hurt, so I didn't notice, so I didn't take breaks. And I know there's specific people I'm thinking of right now that are in fourth year, and I'm looking at you, Fraser, and I know that they need to take breaks and sort of work over a longer period of time rather than doing sort of sprints of work. Yeah. Because my wrist is causing me pain every day now, and it hurts when I'm not drawing. And like, I'm working with a physio now, which is expensive, and like, he basically told me not to take any more commissions until after Christmas. I do have one commission that I already told him about, and I was like, well, I'm doing this one because I'm doing it and I love it. But he was like, yeah, you need to pare back how much you're drawing. I was doing Inktober and I had to stop.
All right, that's how you always do
it. Yeah, so I was drawing every night, but I was drawing for about 3 hours every night after being at work for 8 hours. And he was like, you need to, he didn't say I had to stop completely, but he was like, you need to stop drawing maybe 1 to 3 nights a week. So I just took that as like I'm just not going to draw then. For Inktober, and I just kind of, it made me a bit down, for like, sure.
For people listening, Inktober I would say a competition. It's not really a competition, but like
it's a challenge.
Yeah. That's a good way of putting it. Every illustrator in the world, I would say.
Yeah, a lot of people
participate to this thing where you make a thing a day practically.
Yeah. You draw a picture a day.
In ink, use the ink.
Yeah. And then it's moved on to digital as well now. It's basically just become a draw a day.
Draw a day, yeah.
Draw a day
Which
challenge.
Which is great. Well, you know, I love a good challenge. But like, as you're saying, if you put that on top of everything else.
Yeah. It's like, and also for me, like I wasn't getting enough sleep because I only managed to do 10 days. And I really loved what I produced.
They're really cool characters.
Thank you.
I
drew like my girl gang characters as witches. And it actually... The reason I like things like Inktober, there's also reasons I don't like it, but the reason I did like it is because I learn stuff every time I do something, because you only have a certain amount of time and you kind of look at things differently and maybe draw something you wouldn't have drawn normally, or pushed yourself or done a new sort of, found something out about your drawing and a new way to draw. And I really loved that with that. And like, a lot of people like them on my Instagram. And it gave me like the validation to continue.
Ah, that sweet, sweet hit of dopamine.
And like, I realized it's weird because I really loved that people loved them, but then I started to want the likes more and wanted the comments more. And then when you, that thing where you're like, well, comments mean more than likes. So if you see like the comment flash up, you're like, oh, that's exciting. And then it's horrible. You've like turned it into this game.
It's a slippery slope.
It's really a slippery slope. So I think actually stopping it was good for both my physical and mental health. One, because I can get more sleep. Two, my wrist's getting a break. And three, I'm not looking for that validation. But now, even when I go on my Instagram now and I don't get a like no likes come up now because I'm not doing Inktober, I'm like, oh, okay. And that's ridiculous. That's fully ridiculous.
I know. It's designed to be like that. That's the sad thing.
Well, it's the instant gratification. Yeah. I mean, and like, it's just stupid.
Is that the thing you don't like about it then?
Oh, the thing I don't like about Inktober is that it puts too much pressure on people to make something every day. It does. Like, I have friends that straight up just won't do it because they're like...
Peer pressure.
Well, yeah, and because, like, there's days that you can't do shit. Like, I went to the cinema... Like, so I went to work, finished at 6, went to the cinema, got out at, like... 11, came home and did a 3-hour Inktober, then went to work the next day. And my friend that I went to the cinema with was like, what the fuck? Why did you go home and draw for 3 hours? And it's like, because I have to post it. And I'm like, that's not healthy. That's not healthy. That's not helping anyone here.
It's, yeah, again, it's a slippery slope. Like, yeah. That,
the pressure to post yeah. something every single day. And I don't think people should feel that.
No.
But then I say that and then I do it. Yeah. So it's, you're learning as you go, I suppose. And you have to sort of recognize that you're doing unhealthy behaviors like that. And sometimes it can be really hard because you're like, no, I'm just drawing because, like, I'm enjoying it. And it's like, no, you're, like, I was enjoying it and I do like what I made for sure. And I would have liked to have seen 31 Witches. And that was the thing, that was the sad thing about stopping, is because I really was excited to see what I would have made. But in the long run, I'd rather that my wrist was okay. So
you know what, you can make one a week and have yeah. 56 by the end of the year.
Yeah, that's true. I could.
That's a lot of witches.
Yeah, no, for sure. Yeah. But then I was also like, well, maybe I should just draw a girl gang a week instead, rather than specifically Halloween. I love Halloween a lot, but like maybe they don't have to be all witches.
maybe not. But like, are you ever, let's say, would you write a comic then? Would you write a story?
I'd love to. I think I've been sort of this year with all my revelations of myself and self-discovery. Like, I would love to do a comic of my girl gang characters, but I'm also really interested in being a bit more vulnerable and making stuff about myself, which I've kind of never done because it's scary.
That's the hardest part, put yourself out there.
It's
That's
really the stuff scary. That works usually, but then 100% is the stuff that I appreciate and relate to the most and has affected me the most is people's personal stories. Mm. And sharing personal stuff. Like, I'm really scared of narrative, though.
Why?
But I don't know. I'm really not self-confident in my writing at all.
Do you want to get confident on your writing?
Maybe.
Right. It's this thing called they do every November, then. NaNoWriMo.
What is it?
What is it? It's like Inktober.
Okay.
But for writers.
Okay.
So you sign up.
Uh-huh.
And you write 1,500 words a day.
Okay.
And you have to keep going.
Okay. Is it all to make one story or is
yeah,
it...
Yeah, okay. It's one story. Okay. So you got to... Well, you don't have to, but like you can plan it if you want to. Mm-hmm. I would suggest you do an outline. You have about 2 weeks. So,
okay.
And then you sign up and it's the loveliest thing ever to do catch up every week. Mm-hmm. I think they're doing it in Aqua on Fountain Beach.
Okay.
So I don't know how close, not really close to you, but... Regardless,
that's where the new printmakers will be.
Exactly. You don't have to go to the catch-ups. You can just do it at home anytime, just feed it in, write.
Okay.
Write on your phone. Use Google Drive, easy, you know, write on your phone, on your computer, work when you have a minute. And that is the best way to learn and to become confident in writing.
Okay.
I'm telling you because I love storytelling. Mm-hmm. That's my thing. And last year I did the NaNoWriMo and I'm still working on my novel, but it is so satisfying.
Really?
Incredibly satisfying, because it's hard. Imagine writing 50,000 words in a month, because that's what you're going to do. That is twice as much as your honors project. So it's like, imagine that.
Yeah.
But also, imagine feeling a huge sense of accomplishment after you finish it.
Yeah, completely. Which is what you get from Inktober for sure at the end.
Exactly. So if you want to get more confidence in writing and you want to work really, really hard and push yourself for a month, which I don't necessarily agree to that, but you don't need to do 50,000 words.
Yeah.
You can set your
write
target
something every day.
To 20,000 words.
Yeah.
And if you write 500 words a day, the advantage you have is that you have a story already, you have characters already, so you could theoretically make something. And the focus here is not about writing the best novel ever or the best comic book ever. The focus here is to learn storytelling.
Yeah.
So I would suggest to use the hero's journey or the three-act structure and base this simply on that. Get one of your characters and draw that. Make an outline based on that. I know this is like, it's easy. It's like ABC of creative writing. Mm-hmm. But Star Wars is bang on the hero's journey. Like George Lucas literally like followed step by step. You can do the same. And
I watch a lot of YouTube videos about the breakdown of screenplays and movies.
Same, I love that stuff. But the otherwise it's a story circle from a good friend, not good friend, Dan Harmon. He's really good. The story circle is really good because he uses it on every episode of Rick and Morty.
Okay.
Every character goes through a story circle.
Okay.
So.
Yeah, I just homework. I think for me, like, writing is just something I'm so insecure about.
That's how you go. The only way you get confidence is doing.
Yeah, it's a weird one for me because I am so like happy to put my images out there, but when it comes to writing, so insecure. Even writing my talk for Creative Points. My friend came round to help me and I wrote like the first paragraph and she read it and I had to leave the room. I was like, I can't sit and have you read this.
There you go. Now you are the perfect target then. Because you write 500 words every day for 30 days. You kind of come out the other end and you'll be a lot more confident about your writing. And like if I can write and I'm from a different country, you can. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I think I'm so like... It's really the thing I'm the most insecure about. Like, I'm very inarticulate as well. I say like a lot and a lot of like.
There you go.
And I don't use big words and I just speak a lot. I speak a lot, but not necessarily like I'm not concise with my words. Like, I have friends that are very articulate and will have very carefully worded sentences and can explain something in sort of like two lines, which will take me like a 2-minute rambling talk, which is how I talk.
Do you have a favorite novel or a favorite writer? Or?
No.
Okay. But like, I used to like a lot. All that stuff comes later.
Yeah.
This is all about the storytelling aspect, which is what works. Because you can write and be really shit at writing, but make beautiful stories.
Mm-hmm. Okay. You're
still gonna win.
I might still do a silent comic first, but yeah.
A silent comic?
Yeah.
Why this fascination? You're not the first person to say
really?
Silent
Well, because
comic.
It's the words. The words are the scary part, for sure. I don't know why. I don't know. Writers really just think differently, I think.
Yeah.
That's true. You look at things differently. I look at things in images. And I think my brain does think in images necessarily. Like, I could picture a story through screenshots almost, like a storyboard, I suppose. Yeah. So, I don't know. I think I'd love to make a girl gang comic.
Mm-hmm.
But I would also like to make something personal. But that's the scary one.
What would define personal? Like, is it still drawing or...?
Yeah, like a drawing, like a comic still. I really love one of my illustrator friends, Maria Stoyan. Shout out, Maria. She did a beautiful book called Take It As a Compliment about catcalling and sexual harassment and things like that. And I loved that. And those are all sort of the things that I relate to the most, for sure, is like when people... Like, they weren't necessarily her stories. She was illustrating other people's stories. But I just think... I want to relate to people. I love people. And
in general.
I do. I love people. I'm angry at a lot of them. But, like, I have a lot of feelings. And I feel a lot of things. And I think it would be a good way for me to process that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I have had such an insane year for me, like, on a personal level, that I would like to explore that.
Well, can you not tell us? Can you not write a story about your year then?
Well, yeah. That's the plan.
That's the plan.
But that's difficult because then there's other people involved in the story and then you don't know if you want to share other people's shit.
You can't worry about that. You put it down first and then you worry about that stuff later.
Okay. Well, that's my challenge. But I can't do it with my shitty wrist at the moment.
No.
But I can at least start planning stuff.
You can
type with my left hand as well. I've been training myself.
Yeah, okay, good.
So, yeah.
Well, you don't need that much at the end. You only need a plan and something specific.
Yeah.
So if you say, I need to write a comic, but if you say, I want to write a comic that is 50 pages, which is huge.
Yeah, that's huge.
That's huge. But maybe you want to start smaller. But, like, you know, you have a defined goal. It's easier.
Yeah.
Because then all you need to do is you say, okay, I'm going to draw a panel a week.
Yeah, for sure. And even, like, I don't know necessarily if I would want it to be, like, one long form thing.
Well,
it, like, to be honest, I quite like small panels of things. And for me, like, I think I undercut a lot of my, like, personal struggles with humour quite a lot. Like, to take the piss out myself.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes people think I'm just joking about things also. It was funny at the Creative Points talk when I was talking about doing the stuff for the Bubblegum show. And I was talking about crying and painting and crying and painting. And Fee Sheil was there. Shout out to Fee. Lots of shout outs.
Too many.
Yeah. and she said behind her there was some guys like kind of like giggling but like kind of trying to hide it. And I was like, no, you're supposed to laugh. Like,
that's the fun bit, yeah.
Part of it, like, we're all like struggling to know what we're doing, and I think that's kind of funny, and you kind of have to relate to it and find the humor in it, I suppose. So yeah, I think doing like a short form series of comics would be quite interesting, just navigating life, because we're all unsure of what we're doing. I have no fucking clue what I'm doing, like when I told you before this that my physio was like, so what's your plan? And I'm like, I don't know what my plan is. Fix my arm. Like,
don't worry about my plan. Worry about my arm.
This is not my existential crisis. This is like, fix my arm for me. Help me. Not ask me about what my 5-year plan is.
And then then you stormed out of the room.
No. Then I was like, I've paid for this. Help me.
Oh, man. Well, Alice.
Yes.
I think that's us.
Okay.
Thank you very much for coming.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
Can you tell people where they can find you?
Yeah, so you can find my website at www.alloloune.com. So A-L-L-O-L-U-N-E. And you can find me on Instagram at Alloloune and on Twitter at Alloloune Alice or Alice Alloloune. I should know that. But if you go to my website, it'll show you everything.
Just Google me.
Yeah, I've got an Etsy store.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Forgot to say about your Etsy store, which seems to go very well, right?
Thanks, yeah. Some people bought the witches, which was nice. There's only, well, that's there's good. Only 8 left. So if you want one of my Inktober witches that were drawn with my hard wrist, feel free to buy them. They'd like a home.
Perfect. Well, thank you very much for listening.
Bye.
Wow.